Okay, so staying on ECL and moving to agenda paper 13 and handing over to Angie.
So in this paper, we discuss the feedback received on the committee's tentative agenda decision on how IFRS 9 is applied when a credit-impaired financial asset is subsequently paid in full or is no longer credit-impaired, and the submitter referred to this as curing. When a financial asset becomes credit-impaired, IFRS 9 requires an entity to calculate interest revenue by applying the effective interest rate to the amortized cost of the financial asset. This results in a difference between A, the interest that would be calculated by applying the effective interest rate to the gross carrying amount of the asset, and B, the interest revenue recognized for the asset. The submitter asks whether following the curing of the financial asset, an entity can present this difference as interest revenue or instead must present it as a reversal of impairment losses. In the tentative agenda decision published in November 2018, the committee concluded that an entity is required to present that difference as a reversal of impairment losses. We received 11 comment letters on the tentative agenda decision. Four respondents agreed with the committee's decision not to add the matter to its standard setting agenda for the reasons described in the tentative agenda decision. Two respondents broadly agreed with the committee's analysis of the requirements in IFRS 9. However, they said that the committee's conclusions might not faithfully reflect the economic substance, and for that reason, they disagreed with the tentative agenda decision. Five respondents disagreed with the committee's analysis and conclusions described in the tentative agenda decision. The respondents' comments, together with our analysis and recommendations, are discussed in paragraphs 13 to 41 of the paper. In summary, the respondents that disagreed with the committee's analysis and conclusions did so based on their interpretation of the definitions of gross carrying amount and expected credit loss in IFRS 9, and their interpretation of paragraph 558 of IFRS 9. That paragraph requires an entity to recognize in profit or loss as an impairment gain or loss the amount of expected credit losses or reversal that is required to adjust the loss allowance at the reporting date to the amount that is required to be recognized in accordance with IFRS 9. Three respondents described alternative approaches to account for credit-impaired financial assets, and these approaches are summarized in paragraphs 20 and 21 of the agenda paper. As explained in paragraphs 22 to 34 of the paper, we continue to agree with the committee's analysis and conclusions and recommend no changes to the agenda decision. The second category of comments related to views that the committee's analysis and conclusions would not reflect the economic return and nature of the cash flows recovered. As explained in paragraphs 37 to 40 of the paper, we recommend the committee does not make any changes to the tentative agenda decision in response to these concerns. The board considered how best to reflect the substance of and provide useful information about credit-impaired financial assets when it developed the specific and detailed requirements in IFRS 9. So having considered all the comments received, we recommend that the committee finalise the tentative agenda decision as published in the November 2018 IFRIC update and set out in Appendix A to the paper. I will now ask whether you agree with this recommendation.
Bruce.
Yeah, 7 out of 11 people commenting they didn't think this was clear. So I'll just reiterate some of the comments that I made when we previously discussed this, and that is that there still is a strong view that the standard is not as clear as it should be. And I know we went through this discussion last time, so I'm not going to reopen the whole thing again because we'll just go back in circles, but it is quite overwhelming when 7. I mean, a lot of the comments I've made last time were reflected, obviously, for my region. But, I mean, you start looking at this, these are starting to get a bit more global in terms of whether people think it's clear enough in the standards.
And my observation on that front would be that this showed me that there was less understanding than what I had expected before this question came to us, but even since we published the tentative agenda decision, I think that it shows that we need to, at a minimum, do some education to explain to people how the debits and credits work to explain this point. What surprised me a bit, though, in the examples that we got sent by people in terms of their readings and / suggestions was the number of people who weren't even doing discounting. And I'm not sure how you could get to those conclusions reading the definition. So I do see a need for education, but also definitions are quite clear as well. So, Bertrand?
I agree with the technical analysis, but alongside the Bruce's comments, I think it's Anne where also the paragraph that will be added at the beginning of the IFREQ update would be useful, probably. Mm. Yeah, sure.
I think that's for sure the case here. Martin?
I also fully agree with the staff. I believe they have done a solid analysis based out of the standards as it is. So I also fully agree with the conclusion.
Thank you. Reinhard?
I agree with the staff's analysis as well. I think what I found particularly helpful and really perhaps which gets to the point you were making, Sue, was the staff analysis in paragraphs 27 through 40 in terms of the fact that the asset was credit impaired. And if you were to do the alternate presentation, it's as if the asset was never credit impaired. And I was just wondering, I know it's kind of a late stage, but I found that very helpful to me. I'm wondering if words along those lines might be helpful in the agenda decision, because it goes, it's quite lengthy, talks about discounting, but that's a very succinct way of getting the message across.
What struck me, just as an aside, is that I was struck by the analogy that some people were drawing when they were arguing for a different approach, which was based on a view that if you had an asset which ended up being a good asset, that you should get to the same position as an asset that was a bad asset that then recovered. And I actually think we designed 9 to show the fact that expectations changed over time. So I think our whole starting hypothesis was actually different to the thinking they started with. And so I was thinking that if we did some educational material in addition to explaining how you might do the bookkeeping to help people understand, maybe setting out that sort of logic would help them understand why we went the approach we did. But I don't know what others think. Goro, maybe you've got something to say on the picture.
I agree with the staff's analysis and the conclusion. And the, from the user's point of view, I want to reiterate that my comments, which I made in November, and I think that this, you know, that the gain from curing of the impaired assets should not be included in the interest revenue. As I said in November, that I'm really afraid that this, you know, one-time gains in from the curing of the impairment would distort that the net inflate net interest income, and also that also distort that the net interest margin. And the net interest income and the net interest margins are two most important that the performance measure and the performance indicators. So that I simply do not understand. Yeah, you know that I'm really shocked that there are so many respondents who are opposing to that. You know,
this
conclusion. But anyway, from a user's point of view, you know that the inclusion of this gain as an interest revenue should be rather avoided.
Thank you. Michael?
I agree with the analysis and the conclusion.
Oh, thank you. I'm not sure your mic was on, but you agreed, so thank you. Andrew?
I also agree with the staff analysis. One thing that struck me on the agenda decision just going through it was that I do remember when we talked about it before, there was a point raised that the way that the IFRS 9 model works in terms of interest recognition means that once something becomes credit impaired, you're recognizing interest on the net amount, and there is no facility or permission in IFRS 9 to recognize more than that. And that I think might be a point to see if we can weave into the agenda decision, because what you then end up with is something where IFRS 9 would prohibit the recognition of the reversal within interest revenue, because it's told you you're only permitted to recognize the net. And that seems to me quite a helpful prohibition to be able to refer to. in the context of the education guidance that's been referred to, I would support that. This is one of the quite technical parts of IFRS 9 that perhaps doesn't appear when you run past the surface of it, and I think it would be a good idea to do it.
Jim?
I also agree with the staff analysis and the conclusion. And as we mentioned earlier, it's very important for the board and, of course, the committee to restart another round of education toward this newly issued principles or standards. These are important and complicated. By reading these common letters or disagreements, obviously some of them didn't follow the basic logic behind. I think these are not, again, the individuals. These are big companies or even societies covering the country. If they don't understand or they don't follow to the extent we'd like them to, and right now they are in the first round of doing this, implementing these principles or standards, we should let them know. So I totally agree with your comment on the education and the communication.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Tony?
Yeah, I agree with the staff analysis. I'm comfortable finalising the agenda decision as it's been drafted. I understand the comments about educational material, because it seems to me that they are two different things, an asset that has been credit impaired and one that hasn't, and therefore the accounting is different.
Yep. Just in response to Andrew's comment, do you think we could put in just an observation that interest revenues are calculated in accordance with that paragraph in 9 that refers to the gross and the net? We could just cross-refer to that paragraph to be clear that that's how it is. That's sort of the fact pattern, but maybe we could just add in a sentence to acknowledge that, which I think supplements what's in here and might help. Okay, so with that addition, can I get a show of hands for who agrees with the wording of the proposed agenda decision, please?
Everybody?
Great. All right. I propose that now we do take a break for 15 minutes. So we'll reconvene at 25 to.
Yeah, I know.
Unnamed participant has left the conference.